Well, hello and welcome to Pegasus Radio. Today is the start of a new series called Meet the Boss. And today I am speaking with Andy Dedman, who is a partner at Robinson Lowe Francis. Andy started life as an M&E QS in a business, for all of those of you who can remember, called Mott Green Wall, which was a specialist M&E cost consultancy that later got acquired by Davis Langdon and Everest at the time before becoming Davis Langdon, where Andy rose to partner before the business was acquired by Acom, where Andy remained for several more years before making the jump to the obviously smaller but long-established business, Robinson Lowe Francis. This is a really great chat with Andy. He gives some really fantastic insights about the industry, and I do hope you all find it an interesting listen. Okay, let's dive in.
Okay, welcome to the next episode of Pegasus Radio. Today I'm joined by Andy Dedman, who is a partner at Robinson Lowe Francis. Andy's career started as an M&E QS with Mott Green Wall, which grew into Davis Langdon, which obviously eventually grew into Acom. So Andy's got the T-shirt, been there and got the T-shirt. Now obviously with a smaller business, Robinson Lowe Francis, and he's going to tell us all about his life there and his views of the future. So welcome, Andy.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, my absolute pleasure. Absolute pleasure. So, Andy, I always start by just asking, what the heck is life like for you at the moment? You know, what's it been like over lockdown? What's your, I guess, your home situation? How have you managed to work, etc.? So if you just give us all a flavour for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's been good for me. I've been very fortunate that I worked from home for a number of years before I moved across to RLF. So okay. I'm one of the few that's got a fully kitted out office at home. I really do feel the pain for those still working on their dining table or trying to shuffle around the spare room to work during this working at home period. But as I say, I've been very lucky. I've got video conferencing and teleconferencing and twin screens. So for me, sadly, it's been a fairly easy slip into home working. I mean, that's part of the reason why I started to do my LinkedIn posts every day. You know, sharing.
Yeah, which have been great, by the way. I've been loving those.
You know, I'm on day 69 of that. I can't pretend that some mornings when I'm walking the dog or I'm out running, I'm thinking, right, what are we going to talk about today? But I'm getting smarter. The further it's gone on, the smarter I'm getting and I'm thinking ahead. But the feedback's been great. And also for me, it's been a real personal boost during lockdown to actually feel like I'm giving something back. Indoors here, my wife and I have got five grown-up kids between us. We're the only two indoors now with two big dogs. So apart from, as I say, walking dogs and running most days, I've not been out much. So it's been quite a fairly quiet lockdown for us. But it is what you make of it. And it's given us a chance as a business to sit back and say, what does this mean to us? Which has been a real revelation for us. And I no doubt we'll come on to that. But it's a pandemic. You can't plan for it. You can't look in front and say, what do we do next? We do this day by day and we all find our way through it.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good attitude to have. And hopefully we are starting to come out the other side of this now from a sense of normality for all of us on a life-to-life basis. You know, I personally, and obviously, you know, I don't think anybody can judge anybody else's response to this. I think we've all got our own personal journeys with it. I personally can't wait for the pubs to open, just have a beer with my mates, just to have some normality. As much as I love my family, it'd be nice just to see some different people and do something a bit different, I think, as much as anything else.
And I think normality is the key to this, isn't it? As much as people talk about what's the new normal, it's inevitable that we're going to be looking for the old normal because that's what we're familiar with. And, you know, nobody really likes change, but inevitably there will be some after this.
I think there will be. What do you? What have you got any flavour of what you think that might be, Andy, in terms of, you know, how I guess day, not necessarily work, but day to day life may be affected, or work as well. I guess they're intertwined.
I mean, day to day life. I think the social distancing will be around for a while. You're right. We're looking for pubs and restaurants and areas of release with the family to go and do some home stuff. But again, it's going to be very different. It's not going to be, hey, let's pop out for something to eat or let's pop out for a beer. If you look at the recent stuff that's been coming out, it's all going to be pre-booked. So you are going to need to think ahead. I think the impulse stuff is going to drop out. And I think that's sad for the retail and hospitality industry because they very much rely on drop-in foot traffic, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, again, I think it depends what camp you're in with this. I can... I can well believe that another 6 months down the line, in some cases, some things may have changed, but in other cases, we'll all be back doing the same things we always did do, and hopefully having that spontaneity that will help, like you say, the retail and hospitality sectors. But we'll see. I know certainly me and my wife spent most of Sunday carefully planning our, we always go to Cornwall for 2 weeks, glamping with the girls, and we've carefully planned everything in terms of booking things in, so we've got things to do, because we knew that we couldn't just, you know, do it on the hoof like we normally do when we're down there. So definitely, you know, it's going to take time, isn't it, for us to get back to full normality.
And as you say, it's going to take a bit of planning, a little bit of thinking about, isn't it? But that's a small price to pay in comparison to what's been happening with other people and their families during this last 3 months.
Absolutely, 100%. So, Andy, how have RLF adjusted to the last 3-4 months? You know, what was the business had to do to, I guess, get through? And what are your plans for, I guess, coming back into the office as well? That might be a useful one to understand.
Yeah, it's been a difficult period for everybody, hasn't it? We've been around a long, long time, over 100 years, five offices around the country, which means we're spread across all the sectors. Mm-hmm. So when COVID first started to sort of become news in the UK, I was having team meetings in London and people were saying, what are we going to do then? When COVID arrives in London, what's the plan? And I was almost dismissing it. Oh, we'll worry about it when it happens. Yeah. Of course, it starts to get closer during February. Yeah. The first thing I did in London, we shut our meeting suite that we've got there to external visitors. I said, look, let's just stop and take a breath. Mm. Let's stop having meetings with external visitors in the office so that we can actually work out how this is all going to play out. Mm. And before we knew it, we were sitting back saying, hang on, is it safe on public transport now? Mm. By then, the daily briefings were occurring. Mm. So around the middle of March, we took the decision to shut the London office, send everybody onto home working. About a week or so after that, the remaining offices in the UK, they did the same thing. Yeah. For us, it hasn't gone badly. People have moved to technology fairly easily. We have got quite a large group of younger people in the office, which have helped us with this transition to video and teleconferencing. Excellent. I'm surprised at how quickly we ditched the mobile phones, because we video call each other or we telephone via the Microsoft Teams and things like that. Yeah. Microsoft Teams for us, we've had on our laptops for probably 12 months.
Right.
And we've been nagging the IT guy for 12 months. What's this thing that keeps popping up? What are we using that for? Now we're using it all day, every day. Brilliant. So yeah, it's been okay for us.
Good.
We've just finished a staff survey, same as a lot of other businesses have across many, many market sectors and industries. Most people have enjoyed working from home, whether that's the novelty piece or whether it's a genuine enjoyment. But then a lot of them are ready to come back to the office.
Mm.
There's a big call out there to look at the way the home working, office working pattern works in the future. So I don't think we'll have an office full of people moving forwards. Social distancing aside, because I think we've proved to ourselves that we can operate fairly well with very little disruption sitting indoors working. Mm. And certainly the business I came from 18 months ago, there was a home working culture there already. You know, if you're sitting there doing documents or stuff that QSs do that needs a bit of quiet time, it's actually a lot easier to do it at home than in a busy office. So maybe this will be, the making of us in terms of, a step change to start to get us thinking about how we really can drive efficiencies. And we've known for some time the younger generations coming through have wanted this kind of thing. And this probably pushes the industry in the direction of making it happen.
Undoubtedly, I think you'd like to think, wouldn't you, that any sane organisation coming out of this, now that they've proved the concept, because let's face it, the reality was it was a trust issue for most businesses, about them being able to trust their employees to get on with work. That's been proven now. So you'd assume logically that most organisations will give people the choice. And I think probably inevitably that choice will come down to, right, I want to be in the office 2 or 3 days a week. I don't necessarily not ever want to be in the office, but maybe 2 or 3 days a week in the office, maybe 2 days from home, I think will become, from a lot of people I've spoken to, the kind of natural cadence that most people will find. I think the one thing I keep asking people, Andy, that I'm a bit more unclear on is, how do you think that's going to affect how we develop people, though, in terms of junior guys and girls? Because logically, juniors, trainees, graduates, apprentices, almost learn by osmosis. They learn by being seniors. How do you think that's going to change if everyone suddenly starts to work mainly from home?
That's undoubtedly going to be the biggest challenge.
Yeah.
The buddying up of people, the opportunity to wander over to somebody and ask a question. Yeah, it can still happen in the virtual world, but it really isn't the same.
No.
I think we will, we'll look to overcome it probably by having a far more structured buddying system. Mm-hmm. Days that one of the more junior staff is in the office, we'll make sure it's the same day as their buddy that they're going to work with is in the office. Mm-hmm. That's going to reduce some flexibility because at the moment there's a pool of younger staff that will work right across and support, you know, that office.
Yeah, yeah.
But as you say, it's important we do develop people, not just for the individuals, but for the strength of the business. We need to move people on. We need to give them succession and career plans. And all of that good stuff. And you can't do that if their skills aren't developing. And it is going to be very, very difficult to do that virtually.
Yes. Yeah. It'll be an interesting challenge for the whole industry. You know, not just individual businesses, the whole industry. That'll be an interesting challenge for. And when do you think you're going to reopen offices, Andy? Is there a plan for that year? Or is it still...
That's the big question. Yeah.
And obviously, don't answer that if you don't want to. But
No, not at all. I think it's going to be easier for us to reopen our offices outside London.
Yes.
Because they've all got car parks.
Yes. Yeah.
London, we're very reliant on public transport. We're obviously debating it on a regular basis, but we are still following government advice. Work from home, work at home all the while you can.
Yeah.
I think the challenge for us will be when the government change that advice, whenever that be, then we're going to have to stand back and have a proper look at it. Mm. Public transport, we've probably got 10%, 15% of our London team work within walking distance. So the vast majority of us actually travel in on the train from well outside the M25.
Yeah, okay.
Driving up, that's going to be fairly impractical by the time you've fought your way through the traffic with everybody else and you've paid your congestion charge and you've paid for your parking. It's impractical. I guess getting on the train, all the public transport now, you've got your masks and that kind of thing. Yeah. And that will probably be one of the new norms for a while. Mm. But it's a question of how that will work in terms of the train infrastructure and the tube infrastructure. I don't think there's going to be a lot of appetite to jump on the tube for a while. And if you're coming in from the east into our Finsbury Square office, you're okay because Fenchurch Street and Liverpool Street are a walk away. I come in from the south into St Pancras on the high speed. And that's a fair trek down from St Pancras. So I might be getting my running shoes on and making use of the showers in the building to get to avoid the tube or the bus. But it is going to be a challenge. I think the consensus on our side at the moment is, you know, Boris and the government says work at home. Working at home is actually working. We're not seeing an effect on productivity or client service. Clients are all very happy with what we're doing. So at the moment, there isn't a rush to get back.
Mm. Yeah, no, makes sense. And like you say, if it's working, it's working.
Yes.
At the end of the day, it's just a case of, I think when we get to a point where we start to feel we need to be in the office again to just have that collaboration, the interaction, certainly juniors, I know, and I'm not sure whether RLF have done this generally as a theme, but I've noticed that most businesses across the board, it's generally been the junior resource that they've been the first to furlough, generally speaking. And that's because it's difficult sometimes to manage them in a remote capacity.
Oh, most definitely.
So I think
that was certainly the same for us in London. Yeah. The bulk of work that was continuing was clients phoning and asking for early stage estimates. Mm. The work that stopped, albeit temporarily in the end, were work on site, bank monitoring work, the CDM work. But very quickly it recovered and very quickly we were able to bring people back off of furlough. Technical staff-wise, as from Wednesday, the 1st of July, a couple of days away, all of the guys will be back off of furlough in London and will be back to full strength. Such is the recovery we've seen.
Yeah, and I'm hearing that across the board. I just spoke to one of my clients, one of the larger consultancies, and they're exactly the same. And it's like, we need to get everybody back because it's just getting really busy now, which is good. And actually, I think a lot of consultants have found that it's not as bad as anticipated, I guess, in terms of workload drop-off. Which is great news.
I think we all looked immediately and said, every site's going to stop.
Mm.
We probably had half a dozen stop.
Right.
But within a week or so, all bar one had reopened. You know, they were very, very quick to respond in central London. And the work that we do on the smaller sites on the outskirts of London, because of the way they're set up with less labour on site, they didn't even stop. I guess they paused for breath to work out what they needed to do, but we hardly saw a blip at all.
Great, good. And so the $6 million question, Andy, what's going to happen over the next 6 months for the industry, do you think?
Change, change, change. If I had a big, if I could hold a banner up now, it would say change. I think if we've learned nothing out of this as an industry and probably as a country, we need to be more flexible, more versatile, more resilient. Nobody could have foreseen this. And that's from the IT infrastructure in the office that you thought was okay, but have never had to test it. Right down to your mindset and your culture of you need to be more flexible. Now, the industry is going to change construction-wise. It has to. I think we'll see more drive now for prefab and for modularization. You know, a lot of that's been pushed through and talked about. But this has shown us that this is probably the step change we need to look to remove more labour from site and push it into factory environments that if something like this were to occur again, it's far easier to manage. You know, there's the health and safety benefits there, as well as the quality benefits, and you've built in some resilience in case this kind of pandemic reoccurs.
Yeah, undoubtedly. I think modern methods of construction will undoubtedly keep on increasing at pace, I would say. You've still got a lot of people who doubt that. Interestingly, there's a lot of people who still say not a great deal will change, but logically it has to do. You know, we've already got major skill shortages at kind of blue-collar worker level.
Yeah.
You know, logically, we're going to need to, something's going to have to change, isn't it, to make the business, the industry more sustainable and less volatile, less risky.
Well, you've got the Brexit labour issue also sitting in the background, and I think any of us that make a informed view on that is very brave at the moment to know exactly where that's going to lead.
Sure.
You know, the EU labour on sites has very much filled the gap for a number of years, and that's only going to put pressure on us even more if some of that were to disappear or it wasn't refreshed by new blood when the guys return home, and that even more so because they tend to be some of the specialist trades, and they're specialist trades that we're not bringing through our own education system.
Yeah, indeed. Well, that's a growing knowledge gap, isn't there? I think it's quite noticeable. I think London's one area. You look, let's say, obviously in Leeds where I live, where you maybe don't have as many EU workers. And it's quite noticeable that generally on sites, a lot of the experienced trades are just old and to the point that very must be very close to retirement, if not past retirement age. And that says it all, doesn't it? That clearly we've not invested in skilled trades.
Well, we're back again to it not being fashionable. We saw this after the last recession. You know, we came out of the recession and construction wasn't fashionable because everybody had seen it get battered during the last recession. And you look at kids going through uni now, they do struggle to fill the courses. And that's something we've got to redress by getting out to schools and colleges and starting to steer kids into construction. You know, it's not hands dirty construction any longer. You know, this is about technology and there's some exciting stuff being built. And the sort of stuff that the kids really, you know, should aspire to work in.
Yeah, 100%. Exactly, you say we just need to get in at that grassroots level for construction and make sure people understand, you know, the diversity, the challenge, the excitement, the technology that goes into construction now and in the future, and the fact that they can be part of that, and you know, get involved in that. They can all play Minecraft for a living with real things.
Well, if nothing else, that proves the point about technology. Yeah. There's the technology that's coming through now that I certainly don't understand. And there'll be generations come through that will be able to move us to levels that we've never seen before, I expect.
Well, that's right. You know, at the end of the day, we need to use the youth of today with their ingenuity, you know, their different way of looking at things. Still rely on the old heads who are going to teach them and steer them and teach them how to be, you know, empathetic to people and how to, you know, kind of work with people properly and all that kind of good stuff that we can all teach them. But clearly they will have new ideas that they can bring to bear that we can certainly hopefully move the construction industry and I guess the wider economy forward with.
Exactly. Yeah.
Good. That's been spot on, Andy. Thanks very much for sparing the time to speak to me today. I think we've covered off that quite well. Is there anything else you'd like to add? Is there anything you'd like to add, Andy? Is there anything, any additional comments you'd like to make at this stage?
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much, Paul. Thanks for inviting me on.
No, look, my pleasure. I do hope these kind of short half-hour sessions are going to help people just get an understanding of the market, if nothing else, just to reassure companies and individuals that, you know, we're all seeing a similar kind of thing, similar patterns, and hopefully that we are coming out of all of this, which will be great.
Thanks, Paul.
My pleasure. Cheers, Andy.